Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 337. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about castles and Roman ruins and steel as we go to Segovia and Toledo, Spain. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. United Express had a little embarrassment this week. One of their planes landed at the wrong airport. The airport was big enough for the plane, but not by much. The wingspan of the plane was 70 feet and the runway was 75. The company said they were looking into the incident, which they called a diversion. Kind of like a magic trick. Qantas wasn't tricked, though. They had a pilot who showed up for work, apparently having been drinking, and forced her to relinquish the controls of the jet and bring that right back to the gate. They apparently have a zero-tolerance policy for alcohol, so raise a toast to Qantas. El Al, though, had a rougher time this week. They're being sued by a Jewish woman who's demanding compensation from El Al Israel Airlines for allegedly switching her seat on a flight from the U.S. because ultra-Orthodox men refused to sit next to her. She claims that the flight steward moved her to a seat in the back of the plane, which did not meet her medical needs. One wonders why you don't move the people who won't sit next to the people you put them next to. Food for thought, El Al. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Ralph Velasco from ralphvelasco.com. And Ralph has been on the show three times before talking about travel photography, Montenegro, and Chihuahua, Mexico. And now Ralph has come back to talk about Central Spain. Ralph, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be here again.
And I say Central Spain, we're actually going to do two different cities around that could be a day trip from Madrid. And they are
Segovia and Toledo.
Excellent. Two of my favorite places in Spain. So I was looking forward to this one. So why should we go to Segovia and why should we go to Toledo?
Well, they're two fairly distinct cities from each other and very distinct from Madrid. Of course, Madrid is the capital and a very large cosmopolitan city, whereas Segovia and Toledo are both relatively small cities that are sort of based on a plateau. And Toledo has a river that goes around it. And so that sort of has kept its growth from getting too big. And it used to be the capital of Spain, but the capital was moved to Madrid. And so it's the Tajo River that surrounds the plateau of Toledo. And then Segovia, which is about 90 miles to the north, is also on sort of a plateau, but it's more, it got a sort of a valley around it than a river. It's a fairly small river that does go through there. But they're distinct cities, and I think people will have different experiences in each one, and I know I did.
Okay. Well, why don't we start with Segovia, and what should we see in Segovia when we go there?
Well, really, there's three main attractions that definitely should be high on everyone's list. And one is the Alcazar, which is the palace there. It's used to be a prison for a couple hundred years. It was an artillery school. But in 1862, they had a major fire. And so it's pretty much been a museum ever since. But it's really prominent on this precipice overlooking that valley. And it's really impressive. And I think I've been to Segovia three or four times, and this last time I went inside the Alcazar, and I'd been there probably the first time that I went many, many moons ago, and I forgot how impressive the interior of the Alcazar is. And so it's definitely something that people should spend the 6 or 7 euros, whatever it is, to get inside. And then there's also, you can take, I think it's 152 stairs up this very small winding staircase and get these amazing views of Segovia from the top of the tower there. So I highly recommend people do that.
I don't think we did that when we were there. Okay, interesting. Now, one of the things I think that's striking, you mentioned it being this very picturesque castle, but it also doesn't look Spanish.
Yeah, I'm not sure of what the history is about that. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, basically this is after the Spanish family marries into the Austrian Habsburg family. This castle is built, and so it's like this German or Austrian style castle sitting here in Spain. And so it really stands out from, for instance, there's an Alcazar in Toledo as well, which looks more traditional Spanish architecture. But this one is this interesting, almost like Mad Ludwig's castle in Bavaria. I mean, it's not Spanish style, but very pretty.
Yeah, it's got these wonderful turrets, and it is very much like King Ludwig's castle. And the Alcazar in Toledo is rather boxy. It's not a very interesting architecture, to be honest with you. But this castle is extremely impressive. And one thing that I highly suggest that people do, and I'm going to be doing it with my tour group, is there's a walk that you can take around the whole plateau. So you're down in the valley looking up at the plateau of Segovia. And when you come to be below the Alcazar, it's so impressive. And there's this one field after you cross this little river, there's a field where you get this just postcard view. And I have to admit that I almost had a spiritual experience just sitting there looking at this just incredible castle. And so that's something that I don't think is really on the tourist path, because I didn't see one tourist on that path. And it was all locals, older women and men walking, talking. It was just locals. And it was such a magical morning that it was extremely impressive.
Interesting. And you mentioned museum. As I recall, my kids especially loved the different types of armor that were in the museum. That was probably the thing that I remember most from the museum inside the Alcazar.
Yeah, there's a really impressive artillery museum there, and you can see all the armor and the swords and all the different chainmail and things like that. So that is something to see for sure.
Excellent. And what else should we see while we're in Segovia?
Second on the list would probably be the Aqueducto. And this is a 2,000-year-old Roman aqueduct that is still capable of carrying water. And the visible part of it, it's my understanding that it's something like 7 or 8 miles long. So it's quite long, but there's only a small portion of it that's visible. And so it sort of becomes visible in that valley that's right there. But it's made of over 20,000 hand-cut stones formed into 118 arches. And there's no mortar or cement. So it's just held together by gravity. And it's a wonderful photo opportunity, and you can get all around it, shoot it from all different angles, and I can't express enough how gorgeous this 2,000-year-old aqueduct is.
Well, and we should say that both Segovia and the aqueduct were declared World Heritage Sites by UNESCO.
That's right, in 1985, yes.
And when you can hardly miss the aqueduct, this isn't one that we have to tell people how to find. As you're walking into town, you're walking under the aqueduct.
Yeah, that's right. So you come into the sort of the square there. I mean, you can't help but see it from just about every angle in Segovia.
Excellent.
This weekend that I was there just in late June was a local Segovian festival. And so what I really enjoyed about Segovia is that I probably heard English 3 times in the 2 or 3 days that I was there. It was just the locals that were out. And for this festival, I mean, the whole town came out. And There's the Plaza Mayor. So Madrid has a Plaza Mayor, but Segovia does as well. And I think many cities in Spain do. But the Plaza Mayor had a rock band there. So they had a stage set up. And they also had one set up with the aqueduct as a backdrop.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And at first I was like, oh, no, they put a stage in front of my aqueduct. How am I going to get some nice shots of it? But it was such a great experience to be there during this festival, this local only festival, and to be a part of it. And everyone was out. It was really fun.
Excellent. It's always fun when you discover the local festivals that either plan to be there or happen to be there at the time, too.
Yeah. And I was surprised that I even got a room. Hadn't reserved my room too far in advance, maybe a month. But on a weekend like that, you would think the town would be sold out.
Well, I'll tell you where we stayed. We stayed in one of the Paradors. And for people who are not familiar with the Paradors, this is a nationally run series of typically historic buildings that have been turned into hotels. Now, the one in Segovia, I'm not sure that it's historic, but it is on the opposite hill overlooking the city. In fact, if you look on the Amateur Traveler site, I'll probably put a link up to one of the posters I have of Segovia that's shot from the Parador window. And so beautiful views of Segovia from there. But the Paradors is an interesting option to look into when you're staying in Spain in general. And we did stay in some interesting historic buildings when we stayed in the Paradors. Although, again, I don't think this particular one, the one in Segovia, was historic.
Yeah, that's an option that I've never used in Spain, but that does sound fantastic, and I've heard of them.
And where did you stay? Do you have some place you would recommend in Segovia?
I just remember the name of it. It's called the Hotel Don Felipe. And the receptionist told me that it was the newest hotel in town. And it was just a wonderful boutique hotel, and the prices were just wonderful. I mean, it was like 50 to 70 euros a night for this beautiful boutique hotel. It was maybe two or three blocks equivalent away from the Alcazar.
Excellent. So right in the old town.
Right in there. So I would highly recommend this hotel.
Excellent. What else should we tell people about Segovia?
Additionally, the thing that you should see is the Catedral. And this is a beautiful cathedral that was built between the 1500s and 1700s. And as many times as I'd been to Segovia, I'd never gotten inside because it always seems to be closed. And I don't think it keeps regular hours. And so if you're going to Segovia and you see the cathedral open, I suggest going in then because it may not be when you come back. So I popped in at this point that I happened to walk by and it was open, and it was just gorgeous, and there was no one inside it, so it wasn't crowded. And this wonderful light coming through the stained glass windows, this beautiful pipe organ that someone was playing while I was in there. So I pretty much had the cathedral to myself, but extremely impressive. And if you get a chance, go inside.
And I'm wondering whether I actually have been inside myself as you say that, because I can picture the outside of the cathedral. But it might just be because we did Segovia at the end of Tuesday, this must be Toledo kind of trip. So that they blend a little bit together, but I can't picture the inside of the cathedral in Segovia. So I wonder if we just didn't get in.
Sure. Yeah, and I think I've been to Segovia four times. I'd never seen it open. And so it happened to be open this morning, and I said, I'm going in now. Segovia is just a great city to get lost in. Walk around. I would follow a little side street, and I'd end up right back where I started. There's no straight streets in that town, and that's what makes it fun. So just getting lost, and it's extremely safe, so there's no worries about getting lost at all. I highly recommend this walk around the valley floor below the plateau. And you can come around the other side, and there's many different sort of stairways or paths that go back up to the plateau. So you can't get lost. And like I said, it's all locals. So as close as Segovia is, as I think I mentioned, it's about 90 kilometers away from Madrid, maybe hour and a half bus ride. And I do suggest taking the bus because the train drops you off a little bit further out of town. And the bus was very reasonable. It was maybe 6 or 7 euros one way. And so in Madrid, you would take it from the Principe Pio station, the metro station. You would get a bus there, and it drops you off just outside of town. And I think it was maybe a 4 euro cab ride to get to the Hotel Don Felipe.
Excellent. And then we had actually rented a car in Madrid and did Segovia and then a third city, which we're not going to talk too much about, but a walled city called Avila, which is to the west of Segovia. And it was also very easy to get to by rental car, too.
Sure. Yeah, I've never rented a car there, just gotten around by buses and trains. Mm-hmm. But the bus is really the way to get from Madrid to Segovia and then just get lost on the streets. And there's Spain in general, but I enjoyed Segovia for the tapas that you get there.
Okay.
And so what you do is you order a caña, which is just a small beer, and they give you this beer, and it's wonderful beer, and they give you a little plate of maybe a piece of bread with some ham on it, maybe some olives, papas bravas, I believe it's called, but they're sort of these spicy potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that culture, that food culture that they have there. It's wonderful.
Well, and of course, one of the reasons they do that is so that you don't starve while you wait for dinner, which is sometime later in the evening.
Exactly. They say that they really just kind of bop from tapas bar to tapas bar. And that's why you just get a little bit here, a little bit at the next one. And you could pretty much make a meal out of it if you'd like over 4 or 5 of these visits.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even have to go out to a regular meal, especially if you're trying to save some money.
Well, and I remember when we were in Segovia was the one time that I said, I really want to eat on a Spanish schedule. Because the problem is if you go out at 6 o'clock at night, the only thing you'll find open are some kind of bad tourist restaurants or tapas. And we weren't quite ready to do tapas for some reason. As I recall, I think it was smoky bars at the time because this was before they passed some of the anti-smoking regulations in Europe. And so, you know, it was one of those, I've eaten in enough bad restaurants. I want to eat where the locals would eat. And that meant really waiting more till like 10 o'clock, really. 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
I was in Madrid and I was emailing with a friend of mine I was going to meet the next day. And I said, Alejandro, I'll see you tomorrow night at 7. He says, tomorrow night doesn't start until 9 o'clock in Madrid. I thought that was funny.
Well, and in parts of Madrid, parts of Spain rather, especially in the summertime, you got to understand why, because it's quite warm. So it's nicer to wait until things cool off a bit. Now, Segovia is a little higher elevation. So we found it a little cooler in the summer than some of the other places we went to.
Yeah, Madrid, right in the center there, is sort of in a frying pan. Although I believe it's one of the highest capitals in Europe at about 2,000 feet above sea level, but that's not that high.
Mm-hmm. And then Segovia's another 1,000 feet above that, I believe.
The first time I went to Spain was in 1979 in high school. It was my first trip to Europe, and I studied there for a summer. And so we were there July and August, and so I got to know how hot it was in the summer.
Now, you speak fluent Spanish, so you have a little advantage when you're going to Spain, or especially when you're leading tour groups to Spain. And we didn't mention it on this episode, but Ralph is a photographer and leads photography groups. And one of the trips we did, for instance, was the amateur traveler Ralph Velasco trip to Egypt. So Ralph and I have gone on actually 2 different trips together. But what if I didn't speak Spanish? How accessible is Segovia or Toledo, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes?
I think that the people in Segovia are a little bit less prone to speak English, but it's not like they won't try to speak English for you if you didn't speak any Spanish. So because you don't speak Spanish, it's not like they're going to shun you, but it certainly helps to have even some tourist Spanish so that you know how to say please, thank you, can I have a beer, please, you know, the important stuff.
Uno más cerveza, sí. Okay, anything else we should say about Segovia before we move on to Holy Toledo?
Segovia is one of my favorite cities in the world. And this last trip really confirmed that. I can't recommend it highly enough. And what I liked about it so much, and it was somewhat in contrast to Toledo, is the fact that I hardly heard any English, hardly saw any tourists. And this is a town that's only 90K away from Madrid. So it's a very quick day trip. A lot of people do just come for the day, but I recommend staying overnight, at least one or two nights, because then when the tourist hordes do go home, you've got the town to yourself.
And I think my family would second that. I think at least in Spain, it was probably our favorite city. Excellent. Toledo. We could take a high-speed train from Madrid. It'd be real easy to get to Toledo.
Right. And that's something that's relatively new. And I wanted to get directly from Segovia to Toledo. And I found out that there really is no direct route.
Yeah, you can't do that. You had to go back through Madrid.
I had to take the bus back to the Principe Pio metro station, then get to Atocha station, which is sort of the southern main railway station. And that's where the AVE is. That's the high-speed train.
Right. Now, this is the same train that would take us on to Sevilla in southern Spain, as I recall.
North to Barcelona.
Okay. Oh, that's right. That connects to Barcelona now also. It didn't when we were there, which would be wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, so you take the train from Atocha. It's about 45 minutes, if that, maybe 12 euros, I believe. So really inexpensive. Drops you off a little bit outside of town, but then I just jumped in a cab, and it was maybe another 5 or 6 euros to my hotel there in Toledo. And Toledo, I found that if I heard English 3 times in Segovia, I heard it 50 times the first day in Toledo. It's, I think, a much more popular day trip from Madrid than Segovia is.
Right.
And it's a little bit gritty. It's not as clean and sort of polished as Segovia is. There's parts of Segovia that there's are shops that are closed and some graffiti and things like that, but you see that all over Europe. But Toledo was a little bit grittier, is how I would put it, and a lot more touristy.
Sure.
It is a beautiful city, and there's wonderful sights to see there. There's the Alcázar, which we mentioned. I didn't get in the Alcázar this time. I stopped in some smaller locations, some churches, and an old hospital that has now got a wonderful museum. I believe it's the Santo Tomé.
Okay.
Toledo, as I mentioned, was the former capital of Spain. Mm-hmm. They sort of outgrew it because it's kept in size by the Tajo River. It can only grow so big unless it spills over on the other sides of the river. But it's got a lot of different influences, from the Muslims to the Christians to the Jews. And there's also some great walks around the plateau as well. And there's a parador there, which has wonderful views back to the old town.
Okay. And you mentioned the walks around the plateau. As I recall, a lot of the original wall is still there as well.
There are quite a few walls. There's been the Alcázar. The last time I was there, about 6 years ago, was under reconstruction. And so this time now it looks all beautifully polished and everything. It's too new.
Well, in a lot of the cities in Europe, the old city wall was taken down, cities that were in plains, and that's where the ring road basically is now. But of course, here, where you were on the hill, you weren't going to put a road there anyway. So I think that was probably one of the reasons that they never got around to taking down the wall.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So one of the things that I, you know, as a photographer, what I do is I'm always trying to get out in the best light of the day. So I got up early on the first morning that I was there, and I just walked down the hill, because there's really, it's kind of a switchback to get down the hill. And I got a wonderful view from across the river back at the city. And that morning there were these amazing clouds, and the sunlight was really nice because the sun's low in the sky, of course, and it's giving you that sort of Rembrandt light. But I was doing some time-lapse work there, and so I got some really neat time-lapse stuff. And this was about 8 o'clock in the morning, so not that early. And I went back to my hotel maybe about 10 o'clock. And oftentimes when I get out really early, I'll come back to the hotel and I'll just take a nap from 11 to 1 or so, which is the worst light of the day.
Right.
So I came out of my hotel room about noon and I looked outside and there was no clouds, just clear blue sky and this really harsh light. So I said, I'm going to go back to that exact same spot that I was 4 hours earlier, and I'm going to shoot back at the city. And I just want to show the difference between being out there at 8 o'clock in the morning with these beautiful clouds and wonderful light, and then being out there at noon with no clouds and this harsh light. And so I'm always preaching about getting out early and staying out late.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other reasons too. It's cooler. There's less tourists out. There's less bugs. The traffic's better.
Well, and the one thing we found in Toledo is they really take their siesta seriously. So when we were out in the heat of the day, nothing was open. Or at least none of the shops were open.
Yeah, I didn't notice that on this trip in either Segovia or Toledo.
I wonder if that's changing.
I wonder if that's not changing, that whole siesta.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that that custom may be going away. Because, I mean, it used to be that people would literally leave work in the middle of the day and go home. And, of course, as people's commutes get longer, for one thing, in the big cities, that gets a little less practical.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason that they eat at 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, too, is because
when
they did that, they would finish work at 7, 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So you were talking about churches, synagogues, and mosques in Toledo. For instance, there is a synagogue there that is now a museum because, of course, the Jews were asked to leave during the Spanish Inquisition that happened after the Reconquest. So this is a museum to the Sephardic Jews, or the Jews who lived for a long time in Spain.
Yeah, and I didn't get to the synagogue, although I stayed in a different part of town on this trip than I will be with my group in September.
Mm-hmm.
We will be staying in the Jewish part of town.
Oh, okay. So, interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to exploring that part of the city.
And then you'd mentioned a church, but you couldn't come up with a name. I see that there's one in a Elizabeth Gothic style, and there's one that's in a Mudéjar style. So that's done in the more of the Muslim style that gets incorporated into the Christian artwork after the Reconquest. I'm wondering if that's the one you were talking about, Santiago del Arrabal.
Yeah, I believe that is it.
Okay,
yeah.
Excellent.
I get inside the church this time because mm-hmm. I'd been in it before. And there was a huge wedding on the one day that I walked by. I mean, it literally took over the whole street. This was a big to-do. But the getting inside there is beautiful. And one of the churches has a lot of El Greco masterpieces.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
They're right there. So, and there's not even any guards around. So, I mean, you could touch them if you wanted to. I don't recommend it, but I mean, they're right there in front of you, but it's really neat to be in front of these masterpieces.
Well, and these would be sort of in situ. I mean, these would be where they were intended to be as altarpieces, I would assume.
Yes. Yeah. And some of them were just in separate rooms. And I did find out the name of that museum that I mentioned. It was called the Santa Cruz Museum. And it's housed in a Renaissance building that used to be a hospital.
Okay.
And it's got 15 El Greco paintings inside and a lot of other works. It's just a beautiful building. I mean, just the architecture of the building alone is worth going to see it, let alone the 15 original El Grecos.
Interesting. And for those people not familiar with El Greco, he's the one with the sort of long, thin faces in a lot of his paintings. And he was, as I recall, a Greek, and therefore the name. But I don't remember a whole lot else from El Greco from my art history.
Yeah, and his house is there. Now, they call it his house, but they're the first to admit that they don't know for sure if he lived there. And what they've done is they've taken this, what looks like a former palace, because it's very large, and they've turned it into his house. But it has about 20 El Grecos, original El Grecos there, with a lot of other artwork. And I would definitely recommend visiting that.
So probably way too expensive a place that he would have been able to afford to stay in. But
and then there's also Santo Tomé, which is a very small church, but it has one of his masterpieces The Burial of the Count of Orgaz.
Okay.
And it's probably his most famous painting.
Yeah, I have heard of that one. And if I've heard of it, it must be famous because I am not the eminent art historian.
You had heard of it?
I have heard of it, yep.
He's even painted a self-portrait of himself within this group of people that he put into the painting. That was worth a quick visit. And it's just in this sort of side chapel of this very small church and very close to what is supposed to be his house.
Cool. What else should we tell people about Toledo?
It's another one of those cities like Segovia where if you just walk out the door and get lost, you'll always be safe and you can't help but find wonderful little neighborhoods. And it's very easy to get off the beaten path in these types of cities because there's always this sort of tourist route that goes from one museum to the cathedral to the Alcazar. Those are the sort of pedestrian paths and the shopping districts that everyone's walking on. But if you just get a street or two off, it's very easy to end up on your own, even in a crowded city like Toledo can be.
Now, anybody who's ever looked at my photography, I love to take pictures of old doors, and that started for me in Toledo. And doing exactly what you just said, walking some of these, you know, side streets and streets in Toledo sometimes turn into steps. Just getting lost and found some of these doors with vines growing over them. And basically that was where I started falling in love with old doors.
Yeah, there's quite a few of them there. That was my theme. Now, I was in Europe for a month this past trip in June, and for 2 weeks I was in Central Europe, and I was doing recon for a future photography tour I'm going to do there in May. Then I had a Danube River cruise that I was leading a photo tour on, and then I spent a week in Spain doing recon for this future trip that I have coming up. But I gave myself a theme that I wanted to think about during this trip. And it was door knockers, locks, and details of doors. And when my group came for the Danube cruise, I challenged them. I said, think of a theme that you want to be on the lookout for throughout this trip. And one person chose, I want to look for people at work. Another one was reflections. Another was windows, arches. So if I can give a photography tip, that's something that I would say is just think of a theme that you want to be on the lookout for, and you'll start to see that everywhere. And sometimes you can even come home and realize that you have a portfolio that was based on a theme that you didn't even set out to consciously shoot. If you give yourself a theme, you'll start to see that everywhere. I guarantee it.
I could believe you.
Something as mundane as sewer covers.
I actually know somebody who collects pictures of sewer covers. Kim Mance, I believe, who's been on the show before, if I'm not mistaken, has a collection of photos of sewer covers.
Yeah, and Central Europe is just wonderful. They've got the best. But I say look down and just, you know, sometimes the photo opportunity is right at your feet. And I consider myself a connoisseur.
All right. We mentioned that Segovia was a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and so is Toledo.
That's right, and it was designated just a year after in 1986.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Anything else we should cover about Segovia before we get into some of our wrapping up kind of questions?
Again, just getting lost, but looking for the local tapas bars. You'll have wonderful food, really inexpensive drinks, and it's fun to just go there and be with the locals, hang out, and maybe try to get in on a conversation with them if you speak Spanish or maybe they speak English.
And do you have a favorite tapas bar in either city?
In Segovia, I really enjoyed a restaurant called Jose Maria. And it's a pretty famous restaurant, but there's a bar in front that was all locals. And I mean, it's right off the Plaza Mayor, which you would think would be very touristy. Mm-hmm. But I did not hear one bit of English there. And it might have been Spanish tourists, so it might have not have been all Segovians, but everyone was speaking Spanish.
You mentioned hanging out in the places where locals do. Are there any locals from either city that have really made an impression on you?
A friend of a friend of mine hooked me up with a friend of theirs in Segovia. And so I met with him and he took me around a little bit. And so it was fun to get an even deeper insider's view. And so he was taking me some places that I might not have found. And so his name was Alejandro. And he was more than happy to show me his town because he was very proud of it, as he should have been.
Okay. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Segovia or only in Toledo?
The streets in both Segovia and Toledo can be very up and down and a lot of cobblestones.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to be careful because I tripped a couple times.
You wouldn't be trying to walk with your eye glued to a viewfinder, would you there, Ralph?
Exactly. I've walked and I twisted my ankle a couple times and, you know, maybe fell against a wall or two. But that was something that kind of made me laugh. If you don't have strong ankles, I suppose you could hurt yourself. But I played hockey for many years.
Yeah, as I mentioned, some of the back alleys that I was in turned into stairs. So, yes, I would recommend for women, this is a great city for flats. One thing you should pack before you go to Toledo or Segovia, besides flats, how about as a photographer? One piece of gear that you found useful there?
You know, something that I'm getting into beyond the photography and trying to create more multimedia presentations is a high-quality microphone.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm.
So I've got something called a Zoom H1, and it's rather small sort of handheld microphone. And I would use that just walking around town, and maybe I would hear music coming from around a corner and I'd venture around that corner. And this one time I was totally lost and I stumbled upon this church and I heard music coming from inside. I walked inside and there was this circle of 8 or 9 nuns singing the most beautiful hymn, I guess it was. And it was just gorgeous, and I couldn't believe that I stumbled upon this church, and there was one or two old ladies sitting in the pews praying, and these 8 or 9 nuns singing the most beautiful music I think I'd ever heard.
Hmm.
One of the nuns had to be in her 80s or 90s, but she was in a wheelchair, and she wasn't singing, but you could tell that she was just enjoying this music. That was a really neat experience. And so I've got that on sound.
Before we get to our last couple questions, do you have anything else that you would recommend that people should know before they go to either Segovia or Toledo?
You know, we were talking about sort of day trips from Madrid, but I highly recommend spending time in these places,
mm-hmm.
not just making them a day trip, because again, back to the photography, and I always come back to that, I know, but with a day trip, typically you're going to get there at 10 o'clock and you're going to leave at 4 or 5. And of course, that's not the ideal time for the light. So if you can stay overnight and then get out early the next morning, stay out late the night before, and this walk around the plateau, I mean, it was somewhat hot during the day, probably 80, 85, but early in the morning like that, it was just a crisp 60, 65 degrees. And so that's when I want to be out there with the locals.
And did you pick up a Toledo sword while you were in Toledo to try and get home through the TSA?
Not do that. One of my favorite doors that I saw had a knife as a handle, door handle. That was interesting.
We mentioned that it being a touristy city and Toledo, of course, being known for Toledo steel, there are quite a few places that would be glad to sell you a broadsword if you could try and figure out how to get it home again. We did not either. Finish this sentence for me, Ralph. You know it's coming. You really know you're in Segovia or you really know you're in Toledo when what?
Oh, when you stumble upon a wonderful tapa bar that's got nothing but locals standing around. And most of the time, these tapas bars don't even have stools. So you stand up to the bar and you just throw your shrimp shells, your napkins on the floor. They clean them up later. And you order a caña and they give you some tapas. and you just listen to the conversations going on around you in Spanish. Wonderful.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Segovia, if you had to summarize Toledo, what three words would you use?
Well, if I could be a little bit more general, if I could summarize Spain,
okay,
I would call it the other Italy.
Interesting. Okay.
Spain has just as wonderful food. The architecture is gorgeous. I would imagine it's a little bit less expensive than Italy because it is less touristed.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't recommend it enough. I've been to Italy, but I prefer Spain. And I really consider it the other Italy that people oftentimes don't think about going to because Italy's so high on people's list. But don't forget to visit Spain.
Excellent. Well, Ralph, thanks so much for coming back on the show and telling us about your obvious love for Spain.
My pleasure. And if anyone is interested that might like to go with me, I've got a trip planned for September 2013. And they can go to my website and get more information or email me.
And that would be ralphvelasco.com. And we'll put links to that in the show notes also. Ralph, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Always fun to be here, Chris. Thanks a lot.
I heard this week from John, who sent in a news story that we can use on This Week in Travel, where we're always looking for strange news stories about travel, like the three that I usually start the Amateur Traveler with. And John mentioned the end of his letter that he has not only downloaded and thoroughly enjoyed every single This Week in Travel podcast episode, but also every single Amateur Traveler podcast, including the very hard to come by episode one. Turns out there's a trick. All of the episodes for every single episode we've ever done in the Amateur Traveler, in fact, almost every episode we've done of This Week in Travel, are on the Amateur Traveler website. And so if you just go to Google and you search, quote, episode space one, quote, space, site colon, amateurtraveler.com, you can find episode one. It took me all of a few seconds. So if you're ever looking for something on the Amateur Traveler, if you're looking for a particular destination, that also works as well. So you can look for Segovia, Spain, for instance, and find not just this episode, but any pictures we may have done, any articles or whatever about the episode. You can also find content by the tags that we put on the site. Each piece of content, whether it's a picture, an article, an audio podcast, or a video, should be tagged with the country. It should also be tagged with the particular continent, whether it's in Europe, for instance, like this particular episode, and then sometimes also with the type of content. For instance, the episode we did recently on solo travel can be found filed under solo travel. Just thought you should know. But still, John, quite an accomplishment. I also got an email from Melanie from Ireland, who wrote to tell us a couple things, some comments that I asked her to put on the Finland episode of things that you should know if you go there. And also she wanted to make sure that you know that you can also listen to the Amateur Traveler on your smartphone with the Stitcher app, Stitcher.com. That's Stitcher Smart Radio. And she's listening to the Amateur Traveler on her Android phone. I often talk about iTunes. I mainly talk about iTunes just because that's where I get the bulk of my traffic. And so when I ask people to vote for the Amateur Traveler on iTunes, that's probably how more people discover the show than any other way. Although Stitcher is coming up there. It's probably number three or four at this point. And then Melody also sent a link to a video about Gunter Holtorf's 23-year road trip. Gunter left for a road trip in 1989 as the Berlin Wall fell and has traveled more than 800,000 kilometers. And I'll put a link to that video, which is a very inspiring video, on the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. With that, we're going to end this episode of the Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. You can vote for us on iTunes or on Stitcher Smart Radio. And as always, thanks so much for listening.